It's time for Hartley's CAT Scan, a weekly podcast featuring the who's who of your Prince George Cougars.
Welcome to CAT Scan, brought to you by Integris. Local speaks louder than words. This is part two of our podcast with Jim Playfair, part of the Prince George Cougars coaching staff. And just sort of refresh us, Jim, your role with the team. You're not a full-time coach. Right now you are in transition, hoping to get another NHL job. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But you've had some time with the PG Cougars, and just sort of give us an update as to your role with the team, especially as we go forward, as the playoffs are around the corner and so on.
Well, I think there's my ability to have a relationship with the coaches, with Mark and Josh and Carter, to have the ability to, not be there every day, not be on top of the whole thing, but to be able to, I follow them, I watch the games, I pay attention to what's going on. And then when they're in town and the schedule provides, I like to come in and try to sit down with the coaches and watch hockey or watch the games rather, and come down and discuss hockey and see what's going on. And I think it's a balance where, all four of us have a passion for the organization to become consistently successful. So they're not trying to get in the playoffs and take the heat off. They're trying to grow something that becomes a consistent top franchise in the Western Hockey League. And I love that. I think that's important. Being from Northern BC, the Cougars have always been really important. I think it gives our community an opportunity to come watch some great hockey. And so I'm just trying to help, support, guide any way I can.
So you played a long time as a defenseman. Do you mainly work with them, forwards just as much, goaltender, or do you just, take questions from the players? How does that sort of work?
I would say I probably spend more time with the coaches on individual players and tendencies I see, whether it's a penalty kill or the 5-on-5 or their defensive game. And when I am around a little bit more consistently, then I get on the ice and I try to have relationships with the players and kind of share little ideas. And it gives them the freedom to ask questions about the NHL, ask questions about players that, I've been around and they like, and how, what are their tendencies. And it's refreshing to see how excited they are about growing their games individually. And then now they know they're on a good team and they like to be a part of a good team and they expect to win. And I think that's a huge component of what they have going on now.
What kind of questions will players ask? And is it different from a younger player to an older player? So in general conversation, a WHL player, what kind of questions are they asking you?
What's Connor like?
Really?
Sure. You know, and I think they want to know,
because of your relationship with the Oilers and right. Connor McDavid and all of that, right?
Sorry, yes. And so I think they recognize that they individually have their areas of the game where they feel really confident in and they really like the way they play. And there's areas of their game where they need to improve. And sometimes they're not sure how to improve that part of their game. And I think having a conversation with somebody who's, for them, I'm not there every day. I don't have, I don't have any animosity towards their game. I don't have anything that's going on thinking you should have been better last night. It's more, have you thought of it this way? And here's another way, or here's, I've seen it this way, and this is something you could look to work on. And I think it gives them just a fresh, some fresh ideas coming from a place of, I know you want to get to the NHL. I've been in the NHL for a long time. And here's one or two little things that might be able to clean your game up and speed your development, speed your growth. And that's, it's very rewarding. We have three boys and to share knowledge with them. It's very similar to what I feel like when I'm talking to these guys.
Right. So that's the number one question that comes up about Connor. And then it's just, how do I get to the NHL? What can I do next? And often is it the mental part of the game that they need to take to the next level, or is it still about talent?
I think they've all been excellent players as they've moved along. And my message to them is trust yourself. You've been a good player. Just continue to trust yourself. Continue to be a good player. But as you go along, all those good players you've met and you played against, they're all in the NHL now. So it gets harder to be a good player when you get to the NHL. So you got to trust yourself. You got to find, and sometimes players got to find, change their game. Sometimes players have to make adjustments to their game to fit into an NHL team. And that's about, you can't be so stubborn in your game that you're not willing to make any changes. And I think that if a young player comes along, he's been an offensive defenseman or an offensive player or a defensive player, that the team sometimes needs a little bit, something a little bit different, and you have to be willing to make your sacrifice to the betterment of the team. And that comes with sometimes some hard lessons. And so I just try to explain to them that when you get to the NHL, if you're a third line player in City A, you're probably a third line player over here. And I think a lot of players think, well, if I get traded, I'll be a first line player. In the NHL, it doesn't happen very often. If you're a second, third line, fourth line player, that's generally where you are. People in the NHL don't make mistakes and put people in positions that can't be successful. So I try to explain that find your niche, trust yourself, be a real good player, but nothing trumps the team.
Yeah. So I want to go through your coaching career and your hockey career and all of that. But before, let's get to the roots. That's Fort St. James. Mm-hmm. That's home for you. Yeah. Still is home for you. Great. Mm-hmm. And large family. Mm-hmm. Larry is 6 years older, longtime NHL player. Just update us on the Playfair family growing up in Fort St. James, all of that.
Well, I'm one of seven, six boys and a girl. And my dad came from Ontario when he came up, and he started in the logging business, and he got into the superintendent of the community, the village. And we were all raised there. I have three brothers and a sister who still live up there. They all worked in the lumber industry in some format, logging industry rather, in some format. When Brian Spencer years ago left Fort St. James to go away and play, it kind of gave Larry the belief that he could go away and play, and then it gave me the belief. So I was like the luckiest one because I had the clearest path based on Brian Spencer breaking trail and Larry kind of following, and then I was able to kind of fall behind. And there's been a lot of young kids that have come through Fort St. James minor hockey that have gone on to play at different levels, whether it's Western Hockey League or in college or university somewhere. So it's been an awesome opportunity to call that home to this day. We have three boys, and they're all, two of them are married and one's getting married, and they come back every summer. So it's always been our base. My wife's from Dawson Creek. She has four sisters and they're moved around the country now. So coming into Northern BC is always, we both consider that our home. So, it's nice to be able to, we're from a big extended family. There's a lot of cousins and so on and so forth, and a lot of them still reside in the Fort St. James area. So I think that for me, having that base roots of hockey, allowing us to build a lifestyle from there, it ties into the Cougars being so important. I played in Portland in the Western League, so not very many times my friends ever come down and watch me play or my family, just for obvious reasons. So having the Cougars here has always been a real kind of a neat thing that's always meant a lot to our whole family. I know my brothers have brought their kids down to watch games, and so it's always been a nice tie-in. But we're all proud to be from Fort St. James. It's been a great community for us to raise our families in, it's been a good ride.
Larry had a long time NHL career, close to 700 games, a couple of teams, and you got a little bit of NHL action. Mm-hmm. Was there pressure with Larry having that kind of success and everything like that to follow suit, or were you pretty comfortable that he's Larry and I'm Jim?
There was no pressure at all, and we're both very supportive of each other's careers. I know mm-hmm. that Larry played his entire career, and he wasn't able to ever win a championship, and I was very fortunate to win three of them: one in the IHL, one in the AHL, and one in junior in Portland. And Larry was at two out of three of those to be there to help me celebrate with the wins. So right. It's been a real connection. Obviously, he had a long successful career. He married a girl in Buffalo, Jane. They still reside there. He owns quite a few real estate buildings he rents out, and he's still works for the Sabres, and he's got four children, all four of them now are married. And so he's built a beautiful career, a family in Buffalo, and yet he tries to get back every 2 to 3 years back to Fort St. James as well. And yeah, but going back to our careers, he had an era in his lifestyle where he played in the Portland Winterhawks, and they had a real heavy, hard grinding team. Those players, he was drafted by the WHA, he was drafted by the NHL. He made the choice to go to the NHL. And I came through really 6 years behind him, right? So, excuse me, in fact, later on in some of my coaching contracts, Larry was one that helped negotiate the contracts. He's kind of leaned into that part of his part of my career at the same time. So, yeah, it's always been a real close family, and obviously Larry and I were close with the connection to the hockey scene.
Right. You have brothers and sisters and all that. I know you lost one at a young age. That must have been very difficult. Any other? Maybe you can expand upon that if you want. Any other brothers that had that kind of hockey potential that you guys did?
First of all, for sure. We've always thought that Garvin, the middle boy in between Larry and I, was the best player. But again, he probably saw what Larry went through and I went through and thought, what, I'm going to do something a little bit different. And he's extremely successful with, children and a great career. And it's been good for all of us. And the fun thing about our family is everyone's always supported the hockey part of it as well as the family part of it. So it's been a real nice balance. And Denny, he was 15 years old. It was a couple weeks before the graduation that year. And it was in 82, shortly after I was drafted. And he was there out one night goofing around and had a car accident and he passed away. So yeah, at the time it's, in hindsight now, I can't imagine how difficult it was for my parents. I
mean, right.
Obviously,
yeah.
Now you have children of your own, you get a different view of that situation. So obviously it was horrible for everybody, let alone the fact that, how your parents went through it. So, but yeah, again, it's, would have been a very fortunate, blessed family for sure.
So let's talk, before we go to the coaching aspect, let's talk about your hockey career. You started with Portland, but take us through to the rest of your days and how things have developed as a player for yourself. Just 20 some odd games in NHL, but lots that were around there and everything.
Yeah, so I was drafted by the Oilers, and at the time I had gone through, I'd signed a contract, and I'd gone through and I'd played in the American Hockey League. I had a situation where I had an issue with my back, and it held me out of some games, and then I got hit one day when I was playing in Sherbrooke, Quebec. I got hit. I ended up in the hospital for about 2 weeks, and it was obviously a French hospital, and I was got hit on the Friday night, and Sunday morning a priest came in and he read me my last rites, and so I thought, oh my God, here I am, 21 years old in a hospital in Quebec, and I had a ripped liver, so that was and I come out of that and I'm like, wow, that's that was a close call, I guess, but it didn't, it wasn't the end of the world either. So I come out of that and I continued on playing, and then I signed as a free agent with the Chicago Blackhawks, and that's actually when we'd gone to Indianapolis and we won a championship in Indianapolis, and then Chicago's prime team tonight. Daryl Sutter was the head coach and general manager at that time of the team, and then I went through and I ended up having a detached retina in my eye. I had an issue with my eye and I had surgery on it.
That's from hockey?
I got hit one night, or I hit the boards one night actually, and my eye imploded. And so I ended up with an opportunity was presented to me actually by Mike Keenan to come along and to get into coaching. So I got into coaching a little bit in Indianapolis. And then the next year I started coaching in Dayton, Ohio in the East Coast Hockey League. So I started coaching at 29. I think if I didn't have, it turned out to be degenerative discs in my back and then the detached retina. I would say if I didn't have those, I probably would have tried to get another contract and, play a couple more years. But it is what it is, and it turned out the way it did.
Josh Dixon with the Prince George Cougars associate coach, he had to start at a young age. Because his playing career, due to injury, got cut short. So you know, maybe that's something you can relate with him because you wanted to play longer. Hmm. You know, you're only in your 20s and when you had to cut it short. And, you know, coaching will always be number two. It's a great two, but sure, it's not number one like playing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what I was surprised about when I got into coaching was the amount of work that went into making sure the team was prepared. It was always easy to get yourself prepared. I mean, because that was, right, you're looking after yourself. But, and so to understand what that looked like and what that was supposed to consist of takes a while. And I have a young son now, Jackson. He's starting to coach at UBC, he's assistant coach with Sven Butenschon at the UBC. And it's fun to watch him start his coaching career and realizing the details of building your base, because everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to hurry up and get to the highest level possible, but you got to build a base to your game to have the knowledge to be able to be successful as you move through the next level. And I think too often you want to just race and get to the highest position or the highest league, because you believe you can make a difference there. But it's much more important to be prepared when you get there.
So take us through the coaching career. Of course, there's been 1 year where you're head coach of the Calgary Flames, but before mm-hmm. that happened, take us to the progress, how you got there, how excited you would have been to, hey, I finally made it. I'm not only in the NHL, I'm a head coach.
Mm-hmm. I was started off with coaching in Dayton in the East Coast Hockey League, and I got that job in late August. So you're playing catch up, kind of your first whole season. And that was the Dallas Stars ECHL affiliate at the time. They had their American League, their IHL team in Kalamazoo, Michigan, coached by Ken Hitchcock. And then I was in Dayton. That was their ECHL feeder system. And after I was in Dayton, Ohio, we moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan for a couple of years. I worked in Kalamazoo with the Dallas Stars organization. And then when Craig Button became the general manager in Calgary, I had an opportunity to go to St. John, New Brunswick, and coach at their American League team over there. So we went there that year, and in 2000, and we were fortunate. We won the championship that year, and I think that gave me a lot of confidence in believing I could work with professional players, get everybody moving in one direction, at times get the hell out of their way, and we found a way to win. So that was good. And then when I went to Calgary, Daryl Sutter had gone in. I think they moved Greg Gilbert out, I think, and then Daryl came in. And I went in with Daryl at Christmas time of that year. And then I had a relationship with Daryl previously when we were in the IHL. We won the championship in the IHL. And so we went there together. We had the 04 run. And then the lockout was the next year. And coming back out of the lockout, Daryl named me head coach. And after the first year, I thought we had a successful year. We lost to Detroit in the first round, but we had an overall good winning record that year.
I think it was, 43-29.
Yeah. And so when Daryl sat me down and told me that he was going to fire me and bring Mike Keenan in, I told him if I had a gun, I would... So, you know, we had a horrible, it was a horrible deal in the sense that I didn't think I deserved, like most people don't, but I didn't think I deserved to get fired after the year we had. And Daryl, being a young general manager at the time, felt that he wanted a more veteran guy in there and Mike Keenan. And then that experiment didn't work. And then Daryl was let go. I was let go. And so actually from there, Ken King, the president of the Flames at the time, had said to me, he gave me three options. Said, you can coach the Western League team, the Abbotsford, the new team was going to Abbotsford. I could coach the Abbotsford team, or I could be the president of hockey operations in Abbotsford. He gave me three options. So I chose to go down to Abbotsford and coach the team. I obviously wanted to continue coaching. And then from there, I went to Brad Treliving, reached out to me and asked me to come interview with Dave Tippett in Phoenix. I interviewed with Dave, and then we were together for, 5 years in Phoenix. So that was kind of the story of how it all played out. But again, going back to the Calgary situation, it was unfortunate the way it happened. I think that it was a situation where we had a good enough season to earn the right to have another season. But they're also different.
That completely caught you off guard then. Had to have.
For sure it didn't. And I think it was a complete surprise. I never thought that was going to be the conversation we had. Sometimes.
How do those conversations go? Like, take us behind the scenes. Season ends, disappointment, first round, good regular season, mm-hmm. all of that. Players start cleaning out their lockers and everything. How does this come about? Give the listener a little bit of an insight as
sure.
to what happened.
So the year end, we had our exit interviews. We went met with all the players and kind of explained to them, how the season went, and we got feedback from the players. Did the same process with the trainers. And then my wife and I took the kids, went for a little vacation. We came back, and the secretary just called and said, Daryl wants to have a meeting with you tomorrow. And I went into his office. And
Now, I don't mean to interrupt.
Sorry, no, you're good.
What did you think that meeting was going to be about? Talking about the next season? What did you, at that point?
I thought we were going to talk about the summer plan. We're going to have a development camp. We're going to have whatever we're going to have for making sure our young players were better prepared to push our older players, and our older players had a game plan and what his thoughts were for moving players in, moving players out. And I just sat down and we chatted for small talk for a few minutes, and he said, hey, he says, I think I'm going to make a change. And I'm like, oh yeah. So I wasn't sure what he meant. I didn't know that I was the change. Right. And he said, I think I'm going to bring Mike Keenan in. And I just said, are you crazy? I said, and then truth of it is, he started crying and he said, I look at you like one of my brothers, he goes, and this is hard. But I've talked to ownership and this is what I feel. It's my decision. It's what I feel is best. And I told him he was wrong. I thought he was, whatever I thought he was. Yeah. And it was good though. We went out at each other and he didn't push. He just sat there and he felt horrible, and I could tell he felt horrible. And we had a conversation that I left there and I went home and told my wife, and the kids were in school. And the kids come home from school. I sat them down. And I just told Daryl, I said, I don't want the media to hear about this until I get a chance to talk to my wife and kids and family. And he did that. He granted me that opportunity. And then I went and met with Keenan and talked about a few things, and that was the decision that was made, and we carried on. But it was, you're hired to get fired. You know that going in, you get it. I got fired in Edmonton, and that's business. I get that. I understand that. But that one stung because I didn't think it was deserved, and it is what it is.
You look at the record. I have to ask, in all honesty, this is 16 years since you got that 1 year great record with Calgary in the regular season. Does it bug you that you haven't got that second chance to be a head coach when others have with less record?
I don't know what bugs me. I think, I think you're always working towards that chance again. I think you always put your body of work in, expecting that you're going to win in the next game. You're going to win with the team you're with, but certainly the ability to become a head coach again is always the driving factor. It's always the bottom current. And I think that I look around at a lot of good friends that are having success in the game. Bruce Cassidy's a good friend of mine. We played together on that Indianapolis team.
Right.
Jared Bednar was the guy that was standing beside me when I broke the sticks off the board. After that first year with Jared, I phoned Doug Armstrong and I said, this kid's too good of a coach to stay in the American Hockey League. Someone can give this guy a look. And Doug, to his credit, in St. Louis, they hired Jared to coach their American League team. And then they let him go. And then he caught on with Cleveland and certainly won a championship in Cleveland and won a championship in Colorado. So I look at situations like that where you've supported other guys and helped other guys with their careers. And that's a rewarding part of it. But I think to answer your question, I wouldn't say I'm bitter that other guys got chances, but I certainly work towards that opportunity every day.
Have you interviewed for any head coaching jobs?
I have. Yep. I have talked to some people about that situation. Yeah. And and either it wasn't right for them at the time or it wasn't right for me at the time. And, then I think coming out of Arizona, we had just signed long-term contracts, four-year contracts, and we were terminated before the season started. I think mid-summer we got terminated. They went in a different direction. Get into Edmonton, 2 years of COVID, now you're back. So hasn't been a steady shot straight through, you know? So I would like to get myself back organized and get 5 to 7 more years of coaching, and hopefully within that time frame, get a chance to be a head coach again.
And that's the ultimate goal. That's still the dream, mm-hmm. all of that. You're late 50s now. You've got time to do that. Are you a little concerned that it has been so long since you were last a head coach that somebody might think, oh, we'll go with, you know, a younger person or something like that and not look at your experience?
I think that's always it's always the way it is. I think, look at a guy like Rick Bowness, he went for a long, long time as an assistant coach, associate coach, got a chance in Dallas, and he takes over Winnipeg. Again, it's your ability to be, the timing of a positioning, the timing of an opportunity, a lot of different things play into it, but I don't think very many coaches go to work every day not wanting to be a head coach. I think that's because your whole concept of your daily preparation and thinking, you need to prepare and think like a head coach and then support the head coach. That's my whole belief and system. If you come in there and say, well, I'm just the assistant coach, I'm only going to take care of this, whatever else happens, it really isn't on me. It's funny, Dave Tipp and I talked a lot about this. The most successful situations you can have, I think, in the NHL is to have two guys who were head coaches, because there's so much work. There's the media, there's a preparation, there's a planning, there's a travel, there's a game prep, the video. One guy can't do it all. And so if you can get that right partner that's been in the head coaching decision seat, they understand the decisions you're making, because it's easy to say, we shouldn't play so-and-so tonight. We should take him out of the lineup. Well, what are those ramifications look like for management, for the, for the player, for the organization, for going forward? A lot of things go into it. So when you have been a head coach, your decision making is more based on big picture than just, this is what I would do. But I've never really been in that pressure position. But if I was, I would do this. Well, once you've been there, you make better decisions.
Would you be interested in being a head coach, general manager at the junior level again, or is your mindset, I want to at least get to be an associate coach again, head coach in the NHL?
It's an interesting question, because I think you get to a point where you got to observe and see what's best for you, for your family, for the chance to win. There's a time when I think when you're a young coach, you want to work and do whatever you have to do. I think there comes a time when you want to go into a situation where you can win. And so that is going to be part of the discussion going forward from now into middle of summertime, and see what the opportunities are out there. When you're young, whatever comes down the pipe, you're willing to jump on. You get a little bit more experience and you can look and you can evaluate, you get a better chance to figure out what's the best situation to win in and what's a good situation for my family. And I think those are key components of what I'm looking at.
Now, I know you enjoy working with the Prince George Cougars, but I sort of get the sense you enjoy more working with pros rather than junior. Is that accurate or not?
Well, I don't know. I've never worked with the kids before, and this is the first time I've been around the guys, the young players. So I don't know if there's a preference one way or the other. I think, when I coached the East Coast League and the American Hockey League and the NHL, those kids had all come through junior programs.
Right.
So being out this year, it was really important when the opportunity was presented to me to be around this young age group of players and see what makes them tick and what's important in their life. How do they see the game? How do they see themselves off the ice and away from the rink? And so understanding this, because the game gets younger, right? I mean, it's just, that's the way it's going to be. The game is always going to continue, I think, to evolve to a younger player's game. And so to have the ability to see players at their the starting point has been really beneficial to me, to see their habits, to see how they warm up, to see how they prepare, see how they train. I've seen it at the highest level, and now it's fun to come back and have a look at this level. So to answer your question, this is the first time I've ever been around actually junior players on any for any length of time to see how they conduct themselves.
Yeah. I want to go back to, you mentioned about how emotional everything was with 2006-07 after the season of the Calgary Flames. You said you needed a little bit of time. How quickly was it that you addressed the media, or did you need some time, or did you just confront them head on and just say, oh, okay, I'm going to get this over with and move on?
I just needed the rest of the, I just needed till 4 o'clock till the kids got out of school.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I just said, hey.
You were ready to meet the media and everything?
Yeah, Daryl called it, whatever, however, I can't remember how it played out. I'm sure he called the press conference the next day, and however he went through it, he went through it. But it wasn't like I needed time to decompress. I just wanted to make, I didn't want my kids to hear about it other than from me. That was my whole.
And nowadays, with social media and everything like that, everything is just so open.
Well, yeah, when we got fired in Edmonton, it was just me texting the kids going, hey, you guys, we just got fired, and I'll catch up with you later on this afternoon. And that was just, you know, that's just to keep ahead of the of the media, right? So,
right.
But it is what it is, and that's the evolution of the game. That's the evolution of our society. And I think that, you know, the kids were obviously a little bit older, and, you know, they're not around their schoolmates, and it wasn't like they were in a situation where they had to defend their dad. They were just more like, oh, that's no good. But
I want to talk about your family, and you mentioned that you have three kids, and I don't want to highlight one over the other, but one is very, very well known. Tell us the story there, how, you know, and everything like that, acting career, and how it's sort of become he might be the most famous of the players, the way things are going.
So the three boys are Dylan, Jackson, and Austin. And Austin is our youngest. He played in Tri-Cities in the Western Hockey League, and he took his education money, and he went to clothing design school in Vancouver. And now he works on TV shows and movie sets with designing clothing. His fiance, Shelby, does the same thing. So they're doing extremely well. They work seasonal, and when they work long and hard. But it's a really cool career that he has. Jackson is our middle boy. He's married. He's got two grandchildren. We have two grandchildren, a boy and a girl. And he's assistant coach with UBC. And Dylan is the oldest. He just got married this summer. And he played hockey. And Jackson played actually in Spokane and Tri-Cities in the Western Hockey League. So he went to Dalhousie University and got his business degree. And then he played a little bit in Orlando in the ECHL before he moved into coaching. And then Dylan played in Merritt. And after 1 year, he went to Vancouver, and he was working in the industry as a, I don't know what you call it, but it was like a production assistant, I guess,
right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And so then he hooked up on a hockey team with a bunch of friends, and they shot a YouTube video that went viral, and they ended up, I think they're on season 14 or 15 of Letterkenny. And so he's one of the hockey players on Letterkenny, and it's been exciting to watch that part of his evolution grow. He's since done some other kids shows, and he just landed his first U.S. lead in the movie, and he's filming it right now. He's gonna be filming for the next 6 weeks down in L.A. So that's exciting for him. His wife, Jen, they bought a production company, so they make movies and commercials and so on and so forth. They shot a couple of music videos for Nickelback. They went to Fort St. James and shot a small 20-minute movie based on, it's called a short, based on his mother-in-law's life. And it's they went to the Cannes Film Festival with that and won some awards. So I think they're eventually going to come back to Fort St. James and shoot the rest of the full-length movie. And so all in their own way, they're all doing their own thing, and they're getting by. And yeah, it's fun to watch them grow.
Yeah, so I guess you you have Crave at home because you got to watch your son on that in LA. Saturday nights at the Playfair is at Fort St. James. Let's go together and watch the Crave. How does that work?
Yeah, actually, we had to bum the Crave Dylan's password because we didn't feel like we wanted to buy it. We had Netflix.
We had to buy it.
So, yeah, no, we're proud of all the kids, and I think it's fun because, when one of them does something a little bit different than the norm, it becomes fun. And I'm proud of the fact he does a really nice job of sharing that success, including people. He recognized he doesn't take himself too serious. They went and did a cross-country tour, and he brought the whole crew to our house in Phoenix, and we found a big supper and swam in the pool and goofed around till the middle of the night. So they're a bunch of good friends, they're a bunch of real good people, and it's fun to see that part of their life grow.
And still, the kids still love, and well, they can have all the success and everything like that, but they'll never have a video like yours. We talked about it in part one, banging the sticks, and the kids talk about that all the time, don't they?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, you know what? Dylan had a stag back in Fort St. James this summer, and we're all out in the boat. We're all sitting around the boat and having some drinks and stuff, and one of his buddies says, okay, tell me how that happened again. So then you go back to it, of course, you embellish it because it's still, it is what it is. And kids are cool with it. They were all, they watched it and they're cool with it. It's all good.
Right.
Yeah.
I've asked a lot of guys that have had injuries and all that stuff and with hockey, and every single one says, with all the pain, all the suffering, all the injuries, they wouldn't trade a second. They love every month, and you've documented the injuries that ended your career, and you're still today suffering from them,
sure.
Correct?
Sure.
But you wouldn't trade it, would you?
No, I think what happens is you realize how fortunate you are to have a career, raise a family, and still be allowed to enjoy coming to work every day. Yeah, there's days it's no fun. It's days when you're on a losing streak. It's days when you get fired, all that type of stuff. But overall, it's still such a passion in Canada that you're able to share so much of the game with people. That's one of my, probably my most famous, or most famous, the part I like the most is able to share some stories about the game and expose people to, like you say, pull a curtain back. Let's have a look behind what happens behind the back of it, because it's a wonderful game and it's our game. And I think that when you have a chance to share it, you have an obligation to share it with people because they're the fans, they pay for it. And, I've done a lot of public speaking for different companies, and the thing I like to share with them is, after you get through the business of what you should be talking about, you open up the Q&A and the questions that come at you are about what happened here, what happened there. And it's important to share that with people because it's such a fun game. It's such an important part of our fabric, and we're very blessed to have the opportunity to do it.
So I asked you earlier what the PG Cougars ask you. When you go and are a public speaker, what's the public asking you other than maybe the stick man, right? What are the questions that you get?
I would say the biggest thing that they want to know is, how do you get a team for 82 games to buy into a plan, to buy into a focus? How do you handle the highs and lows of that? How do you set your target goals per month, per 7 games, 10 games? And then how do you, when you reach a milestone, how do you reset for the next one? A lot of times what I do is I'll meet with a company, I'll hear what they're trying to, achieve as a company. Then I'll tie that into opportunities I'll tie that into scenarios that I've had throughout my coaching career and playing career. And then I'll just sit down and say, listen, does this make sense to tie in? This is how I see your goal setting. This is how I see your, whatever it happens to be. And then you blend a meeting, or you blend a messaging together so that the people can hear enough about the NHL, enough about the hockey, and then tie into the goals of their own business, their own team. And what I've realized is how many businesses want to have a team environment. How many teams want to have the importance of it being a business. We have to win. We're feeding, you know, we're winning is important. And if we don't win, like, you know, fans aren't going to come. Fans don't come financially. We get, so it all ties in. And so I think a lot of my meetings, a lot of the speaking engagements really tie into the fact of how do you get a team to expect to win, to learn to win, and then become a winning team. And so it's I really enjoy it because you get a chance to really kind of share with people what goes into it.
Yeah. And I guess that's what, you know, it's going to be so fun coming up. We talked earlier about PG Cougars and learning how to win and where they're at. We really don't know where they're at, do we? I mean, we know that they've improved. We know they've got some good players. We know a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if we really know where they're at.
I think we know they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I think what we know is they're building a trust and a quiet trust and confidence within the dressing room. They're learning to expect to win. I think there was a time they wanted to win. They're hoping to win.
Right.
Now I think they're expecting to win.
Do you go into the dressing room, like, you know, when you're around, or do you just sort of stay away from that aspect?
I go into the coach's office, and then I will, when I go on the ice, when I go on for practices, I'll either before or after, I'll go on, sit on beside some players and just chat with them and see what's going on. And I'll ask the coaches, where is everybody? Where, and they'll say, oh, you know, this guy here is not feeling good about his game, and I'll watch his game and go sit down and try and find four or five things I think he can work on. And they have enough hard, firm, clear direction. They don't need that from me. They just need a set of fresh eyes that says, have you thought of this? And so I think it's a real, they've heard of, Mark was telling me after he introduced me to the team and I went on a dressing room, they pulled up the break in the sticks things. Of course they would, right? Like, you know, I wouldn't have thought they would, but as soon as he hears, you go, oh, I guess they would have, you know? And then some of them know my son through the acting thing, right? So they'll ask about, so there is some things in common that they have this, some humor with, you know? And so is my thing about being in the dressing room is that's a really, you got to be really respectful of their dressing room. That's their place. And if you're coming in, you're coming in as a guest. And you got to be very respectful of my time in there. And so I don't hang around in there. I don't spend much time in there. But when I do, it's specifically to try to share some knowledge with one or two of the guys.
Right. And I guess that's the fun part. I mean, everybody's geared up for playoffs. And that's what's ahead and all of that. So I'll tell you what, these two podcasts, they've gone by very, very quickly. We are going to have you on again. Very, very well spoken and everything like that. I guess I wanted to ask you one thing, though. As a coach, and we think of a coach as sort of an expert in everything. Now, you're a defenseman, and you've been head coach, associate coach. Are there aspects that you feel you are specialized in, and are there aspects that you think that, you know, even you can brush up? In other words, are you as comfortable talking about all the intricacies about a forward where you didn't play as opposed to a defenseman where you excelled?
I think I'm very comfortable on the structure zones and all three zones of the ice with the puck, without the puck.
Right.
I think I see stuff very quickly and I see a solution very quickly.
Is that all natural? Did you take courses? That just all come to you? How did you get all that other than just playing?
No, it's probably truthfully hundreds of hours of videotape and trial and error. And and so I think, and I will tell you this though, from coming in the dressing room and I remember one day I was sitting down with Josh and we went through some PK stuff, some penalty kill stuff. And we were going through, and I had some videotape that I had some from some other really successful NHL teams. And I said, well, here's something that I have. You might want to look at it. So it was 30 minutes of somebody, St. Louis or whoever it was, really good penalty kill structure. And he watched it and looked at it. And then I came back and we looked at it again. And then when he presented to the team, how he sliced and diced and he built it his way. When he presented it to the team, he used terminology that I hadn't heard of.
Really?
And I was like, that's pretty cool. Like he has his own style of speaking, and the players were able to pick up on his messaging because they had heard his terminology before.
Right.
So my terms were different, same probably focal point, but the terms were different. And I walked out there going, I like his terms better. So I will use some of his terms now. So that's what I think is the coolest part about coaching is listening and how I'm Mark had the penalty kill or power play in one time before the game, and he was showing the guys the power play, and the guys started like having their own, like, can we do this? We should do that. And they were kind of like, they were having major input into the power play meeting. And then they went on the ice and executed it. Yeah. So I went up to him in the dressing room after the game and said, good for you guys. You guys saw something. You guys wanted to execute it. Mark let you have the freedom to do it. And you guys did it right. That to me is just good coaching, because Mark wasn't about Mark. It was about the team finding a way to score a goal, and the kids had impact. So they took ownership. Mark let them have ownership, and they succeeded with it. That's pretty cool.
It's been a lot of fun. Let's do it again.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks.
Jim Playfair is with the coaching staff of the Prince George Cougars. You've been listening to CatScan, brought to you by Integris. Local speaks louder than words.